The next case is 06-3450, the United States against Frank Roman. Mr. Gutierrez.
Please support the court. Good morning, judges. Mr. Kubitowski. I raise three issues in this case on appeal. The first one, as you know, is the sufficiency argument, which is the tallest hurdle. The second one is the fact that the government chose to equate a policeman's oath with the jurat oath that we take when we fill out our tax returns. And then the third issue, of course, is the ancient Leviticus proverb, which says there, but for the grace of God go I. The court took exception. The government took exception, and the court agreed that that constituted a Teslim violation, which says that you cannot ask the jury to place themselves in the shoes of the defendant. I respectfully disagreed with the court, and I would hope that my arguments today would convince this court that the proverb is an old moral, it's a fundamental moral principle. It's older than our laws themselves, which asked in a specific scienter case that the jury objectively place itself in the subjective role of the defendant and think about themselves in ways where each and every one of us has to think of our own culpability, our own decision-making process. Since this case involved the willfulness aspect, it's not merely that you make a mistake or that you set about the task of creating an artifice. I think that the IRS laws or the chapters dealing with signing the jurat on our income tax returns specifically requires you to willfully set about the task of underreporting, to say we are lying on this. We know that we are lying.
It's but not Mr. Gutierrez, if the jury accepted the testimony of Agent Zagata, it's hard for me to see what else there is to say about this. Had Agent Zagata not testified, there might have been other more indirect ways of showing Mr. Roman knew that the cash was taxable income, knew it was supposed to be on his tax return, knew at the relevant time, et cetera, et cetera. But we have that testimony, and the jury was entitled to credit it.
Well, I think that some of Agent Zagata's testimony was misconstrued in terms, not by the jury, I mean the actual statements that he made. One of the statements that he made was that he believed that he intoned, and this was then again re-argued, that he believed that Frank Roman knew what he was doing at the time.
But there's an excerpt that I'm looking at from transcript 91-92 where there's an exchange between Mr. Kubitowski and Mr. Roman, Mr. Zagata, about these 1998 and 1999 tax returns. It's very specific. Mr. Roman wasn't saying he believed anything. Mr. Roman said that he knew cash was considered taxable income, and he knew it was supposed to be on his tax return. And you know, juries are entitled, as you agree, to believe these kinds of things, and it seems to me that's enough to show specific intent.
Well, Your Honor, it goes to the matter of sufficiency, I suppose. And the court saw, Judge Cannelli saw that that could be interpreted as that Mr. Roman knew this. But recall that Agent Zagata was testifying as to something that he believed that Frank Roman had stated.
Well, he's testifying to his recollection, as everybody does. Did you ask Mr. Roman whether or not the cash he earned? And he says, yes, I asked. That's just how people testify. I don't know that that's a belief. Let me ask you a question about the oath point that you're making. Yes, as to that, it seems to me we have Judge Cannelli proactively intervening. He's concerned about the direction he's seeing in front of him. So he stops things. He issues a curative instruction. He tells the government not to argue that way. Why isn't that enough to satisfy that problem?
Well, Judge, first of all, Judge Cannelli took a proactive approach because I believed at the time that the government was entitled to probe a bit about how a policeman should, or not how a policeman should, but how a person who does take oaths, yeah. For instance, if it was a lawyer, I'm sure that it would have been fair game to say, you know, if you're a lawyer and you take an oath that you're going to tell the truth, that should stick forward. But I believe that once Judge Cannelli brought it to the table, I believe that once he said, look, you're on notice, the government is on notice that it can no longer do this or that it can't push it that far, then I think that during closing arguments, when I objected to it and I asked for a mistrial based upon this, that I think at that point that the government had gone too far, that in spite of the warning by the court not to do it again, that I think that the government tried to push a little more along those lines. I'm not saying that they went beyond what the court had admonished them, but I think that by re-raising it again during closing argument, by bringing it up again, the cumulative impact of it had the winning balance for the government. This is a policeman. He should know. He took an oath. And
but
therefore,
the government lawyer actually says in rebuttal that it doesn't matter if he's a police officer because he's not held to a higher standard. Concedes that, as I read it.
Well, in that regard, that was the rebuttal closing. But
right.
in closing argument, it did say that, a policeman should know.
Okay.
So, I mean, yeah, and they try to...
On the there but for the grace of God, it sounds an awful lot like an argument for mercy, perhaps, an argument for jury nullification, all of which are things juries can do, but we have rules about telling them that, you know.
I understand, Judge, but, you know, the in murder trials, this is a typical plea when you're arguing self-defense, to put yourself in the subjective shoes objectively. And granted, we do ask not for jury nullification. We're not permitted to ask for jury nullification. But we certainly are entitled to in tax cases because everybody has an opinion about taxes. You know, it's like everybody has an opinion about leniency in death penalty cases. And I equate that because of the relatively similar scienter requirements for both. I mean, one you sort of have to lie in wait and have malice aforethought. In this case, it asks for the willful disregard of your reporting requirements. And if you took it as a whole and you saw Mr. Roman, who is a long-term police officer and supporter of law and order, who was being paid by an agency that was under investigation for their unscrupulous tactics. They never gave him a W-2. He knew that he earned it. He knew that he had to report it. He didn't report it. He knew that he had an obligation to do it. It just didn't occur to him. Now, is that the type of person that we want to punish with a felony conviction for not reporting something because he didn't know he had to report it? He knew he had to at some day account for it, and that's when the agents came to him and said, this is about this case, isn't it? And so I guess I'm asking for the same kind of leniency I had asked for before, but thank you, Judge. I'll reserve my time.
Thank you, Mr. Gutierrez. We'll hear now from Mr. Kubiatowski.
May it please the Court. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Steve Kubiatowski, representing the United States. Let me start with the Teslim golden rule argument. The court's rule of law on this is well settled. You can't make pitches to jurors to place yourselves in the shoes of the defendant. Certainly, jurors are entitled to draw upon their own experiences when evaluating the evidence and applying it to the facts. But what Mr. Gutierrez wanted to do here was very different.
It's also different from Teslin. You know, prosecutors aren't allowed to tell the jury, put yourself in the shoes of a victim. Right?
Certainly, Your Honor.
I mean, that's very clear. But this is a little different. This is the defendant saying, you know, the question on the table is my state of mind. Put yourself in my position. Would you have known?
I agree, Your Honor. Teslin is not precisely on point. But the rationale underlying it, I think, does apply. What Mr. Gutierrez wanted to argue was this could just as easily be you on trial. This could just as easily be you. And that's not an appeal to an evaluation of the evidence which was in front of him. This is a personal appeal. And that's what Teslim said was the reason underlies this court's rule that you can't make golden rule appeals or arguments along those lines. So, yes, I would agree it's different, but that's not... It doesn't apply in this case. Mr. Gutierrez's proposed pitch, was going exactly to the point which Teslim said was impermissible.
But, you know, I mean, you're suggesting, I think, implicitly that there has to be also, I'll say, a lack of connection with the evidence that's been presented. I mean, suppose it were relevant in some trial. I can't imagine what it would be, you know, for somebody to understand, you know, the annual budget of the United States. And so the defendant was saying, you know, I didn't understand this thing. You know, here's this massive volume that's got all number of things. Nobody could understand it. It seems to me you might be able to say to the jury, you know, a rational person isn't ever going to understand this document. It's just too long, too complicated. That would be tied to the evidence, perhaps, in a way that just saying, you, the jury, should put yourself in my shoes might not be.
I'd agree, Your Honor. It's a fine line. But in this case, I think what the defense wanted to do was go beyond that fine line.
Okay.
As I stated, Your Honor, jurors are supposed to draw upon their common experience. They're instructed on that routinely when evaluating the law and the evidence. And in a tax case, everyone's going to come into the jury panel with their own sense as to whether or not the tax laws are complex, simple, because they're all drawing on their own experiences. But where I think this court drew the line in Teslim and where we draw the line in this case is Mr. Gutierrez wanted to tell the jury, this could just as easily be you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where you draw the line, Your Honor. Mr. Gutierrez could make the argument in closing that, you know, tax laws are complicated. Mr. Roman is a simple man. He didn't understand what was going on. That's what Mr. Roman testified to during his cross-examination.
Okay.
That is acceptable argument. But when you go over the line and say, well, this could just as easily be you on trial because this is a complex case, that's where I think you have to draw the line. But I would agree, certainly in this case and other cases, it could come close. But I think we have to abide by the Teslim rule to avoid any personal pitches by either the government or the defense. With respect to the oath argument, there was nothing inappropriate at all about the government's line of questioning. And as you pointed out, Judge Wood, Judge Kennelly interrupted to make sure it didn't go to a place where Judge Kennelly believed could present problems. The government, after that admonishment, never made any suggestion that the defendant should be held to any higher or lower of a standard than beyond a reasonable doubt. We abided by Judge Kennelly's admonishment, and that was the end of it. He offered the curative instruction. The jurors are presumed to abide abide by that instruction. So we would respectfully request this court recognize that that line of questioning was entirely appropriate, and that after Judge Cannelli's admonishment, that we abided by that admonishment. I can understand where Judge Cannelli was concerned, and again, we abided by his instructions. Unless there are any questions about the sufficiency issue or any other issues, I'll yield the remainder of my time to the court.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
How much time does Mr. Gutierrez have? Thank you, sir. Mr. Gutierrez, I would also like to thank you on behalf of the court for the fine work that you did on behalf of your client, having taken this as an appointed counsel. The court thanks you for your help. The case will be taken under advisement. We have finished the call of the day, and therefore the court will rise until 9:30 tomorrow morning.